RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about the UFC Fight Island documentary that's now available on ESPN Plus. We'll recap what we saw happen last weekend with the UFC and Bellator cards. Also, we'll preview this weekend's MMA. We've got another Fight Island card coming up on Saturday, and Bellator's got some events happening in Paris. Also, we'll talk, speaking of Bellator, we'll talk about some of the recent signings they have made. Also, the fact of Usman versus Burns has been scratched from the December the 12th pay-per-view, all that and so much more on this edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, whatever podcasting platform you're listening to, if you get that five-star rating, that really does help us out a lot as well. And maybe if you're listening to this on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button and hit that subscribe and notification bell, as I really would appreciate that. Daniel, it's late here on Wednesday morning. How you doing, man?
Man, Jason, I'm doing okay. I mean, I feel like at the beginning of the show, it's always a check-in on what happened in the world. And it's so hilarious. If we made a graph, Jason, of just things that happened during the 7 days that we took off from doing a podcast, it would be astonishing. Like last week, you made a joke about us interrupting each other. Like, that was the big storyline because it was the debate. It's 7 days later. We have the president in and out of the hospital because of COVID. We have Cam Newton, the quarterback for the Patriots, getting COVID. And then the guy on the scout team playing Cam Newton for the Chiefs getting COVID, and so many other news items. I'm so scared to stop recording this podcast because I don't know what the hell is going to happen in the next 7 days, Jason, but I'm excited to be here with you talking mixed martial arts action.
Yeah, it's you never know what could break right after me. The hell, we were doing the show last week when the news of Paul Daly being off the Bellator card came out, and you know, then you see the Instagram video that he put out there, and I thought one of the most fascinating things about that was the fact that Paul Daly knew that if he took an IV, he was out of the fight. And I think that's something that I wonder how many Bellator fighters understood that if you take an IV, you're done.
Yeah, Paul's a veteran of the game, and I think that should be common sense, but maybe not when you are so hyper-focused on what's going on. But yeah, I think in terms of MMA, we really haven't had a big news story in a hot minute. So it does feel, I know we have a, later on the show, we'll be talking about a main event getting pushed back or canceled, but it just feels like you can feel it in the air. Like whenever nothing has happened for a couple of weeks, all of a sudden something major happened. So I feel like as soon as we're done recording, Jason, some type of major breaking news is going to take place. But, I'm going to knock on wood and hope not.
Well, who knows? Maybe that breaking news will be a Conor McGregor fight. I know Dana White was on with Robbie Barstool. What was it? I want to say end of last week, maybe beginning of this week, where he talked about the fact of they've offered Conor McGregor a fight against Dustin Poirier. I want to say on December the 12th, it's kind of interesting to see what the UFC does, because obviously with Garbrandt now out of the flyweight title fight against Davison Figueiredo, Alex Perez is now getting that matchup of what is the UFC going to do with that. I want to say it's November 21st pay-per-view in terms of, do you have that quote-unquote headliner for that card? So, but of course, like you said, Dale, anything can always happen. But do want to mention, I watched the first two episodes of the Fight Island documentary that's on ESPN Plus. I want to say it got uploaded on ESPN Plus, I want to say like Friday or Saturday of last week. So yesterday, sitting here in the office, and I got an early start today and kind of got a lot of things done pretty early in the day. So I started watching this because obviously I had seen the promotion for it during the past 2 weeks during the UFC broadcast. And, I went into it with the thought of, okay, this is likely going to be a story told through the UFC's sunglasses. And that's very much what it was. I mean, right when you turn it on and I see executive producers Dana White and Craig Borsari, I'm like, okay, all right. Obviously, what is on this show is exactly what the UFC wants to show you. But what I will say is that I think as a MMA fan, I would recommend watching this. I thought it was really kind of fascinating to hear them outline kind of how all this thing came together. Hunter Campbell, who, of course, you know, basically Dana White's right-hand man in terms of the management there, he mentioned that they were actually looking at 10 to 12 island locations, but Abu Dhabi was basically the place that, you know, because of the previous relationship they had with them. One of the things of, you know, if I was going to cast any negative light at all, or maybe negative's not the right word. Maybe the right word is something that was definitely not put in for a reason. They definitely made sure not to mention the fact of the cards at Tachi Palace being scratched by the governor of California.
Yeah. And I have not seen it, Jason, but I think I will watch it. But I'm sure they also didn't mention that, you know, Mickey Mouse giving Uncle Dana a call and telling him to hold off for a little bit. I'm sure that wasn't included in the documentary. But it sounds entertaining. I mean, I'll give it a watch. There's nothing wrong with these types of documentary infomercials. And honestly, they can probably be pretty dang good. It sounds like an adult grown-up version of, you know, the stuff you would see on their YouTube channel on the lead-up to a pay-per-view event, those seven-minute clips. It just sounds like you had a pretty good documentarian behind the helm putting together a nice product. And it sounds good. You know, obviously, you're not going to get the nitty-gritty and the stuff that makes them look really bad. You know, if there was a documentary produced by the NBA on the NBA bubble, we're not going to get the scene of Daniel House inviting the test taker into his hotel room and getting kicked out of the bubble. We're not going to get that scene in the NBA documentary, and we're not going to get the stuff that we don't know about, that the UFC doesn't want us to know about, in the UFC-produced documentary. But that still doesn't mean it's not worth a watch. And the way you're talking it up, you know, I think I will give it a watch. There's four episodes, and we shall see. What I like about it is the idea of, even though you're not getting the full picture, you're getting a much, much more clear picture and much, much more information about what is happening. That is always cool. I do wonder how, when you're at Fight Island, when it's such a priority to socially distance, or at least you would hope so, how the heck you go about doing a documentary. Because that just seems like a hard thing when it comes to maybe miking people up, unless you're using, you know, boom mics, which seems unrealistic. But just when you're doing a production like that, you are going to touch the people you are filming. So I do wonder what that was like. It seems probably like a hard task to do a documentary. But I want to see the nitty-gritty. I want to see the details that get lost on a pay-per-view or TV broadcast, and it sounds like it delivers that.
Yeah, I would say I think they were using a boom mic to get some of the audio there. I mean, as I wrote down some notes on just some of my takeaways, this is from episode one. Dana White saying, BS, this is about money. Look, Dana White can continue to say that line. I don't know how many people are ultimately going to believe that. They had I want to say it was like the marketing person for what I would essentially call the Abu Dhabi Tourism Board, Chamber of Commerce, whatever way you want to put it. And one of the things they mentioned that, so they had four different hubs of airlines coming into Abu Dhabi. And the fact of that, anyone working the flight, the flight crew, they had to be quarantined 14 days before the flight, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then my other big takeaway from the episode one is Dana White is definitely do as I say, not as I do, because the one thing you never see in any of this documentary, Daniel, is Dana White wearing a mask when everyone else is.
Yeah, I wonder if that dude got COVID. I really do. I feel like he wouldn't tell people. I really don't think we have that trust with Dana White. Like Dan is that guy who's hurt us too many times that we can't trust him alone on a Friday night at the club, you know, while we're at home. You know, I don't trust Dana. All right. I have trust issues with Dana White. And even though he's always been around, I just feel like, damn, there's no way. Like, this dude interacted with so many people throughout this entire pandemic, seemingly without a mask. I he may have been asymptomatic, but he is not someone who practiced it, who practiced the guidelines that he would want his people to do, or maybe he wouldn't want them to do, but he feels pressure to do it because of outside pressure. But I mean, that's kind of the underlying thing with Dana, is you look at his actions and even though he talks a big game, a lot of the actions don't necessarily jive with it. And I think out of your leaders, what you want to see is a guy who sets the tone. And I think if you looked at Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, I think you would see a guy who does that. But for Dana, for a guy like Vince McMahon, I don't think you're going to get that. That's just not their personality. I think that's a bit of a shame, but whatever. That's who Dana is, and we know him. But yeah, I think that's the only obnoxious thing about the documentary that I would anticipate is that we're seeing Dana White's vision, given that he's the producer, and it's like, I already know what his vision is. But I'm still down to check it out, and I think for Abu Dhabi's sake, I mean, the only thing about Abu Dhabi, I hope that's not featured too much, just because, like, it feels like Abu Dhabi's motto is like, we're going to give you a lot of good money. We're going to give you a lot of money. Just leave us a good Yelp review, is what I think Abu Dhabi's motto has been for the past like 5 years. Like WWE or whoever. I guess WWE didn't go to Abu Dhabi, but whoever, come over here. We're going to give you a lot of money. Give us a good Yelp review. Help our tourism board out. And it's like, I'm a little on the fence about that one, folks. But otherwise, it seems good. Again, I want to see the stuff we don't see that is interesting. And it sounds like there's a lot of tidbits in there that the casual mixed martial arts fan and the hardcore mixed martial arts fan would absolutely eat up.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was a infomercial at all for Abu Dhabi. I mean, I think that what I found probably the most fascinating about it was just kind of all the planning that went into it, especially kind of when you hear the Abu Dhabi side of things, of how they were putting everything together and how they wanted to make sure that this was the safest possible place for everyone to come in. And, you know, episode one ends where the UFC finds themselves in a little bit of an issues with positive COVID tests. And I don't want to, for people who've not watched, I don't want to kind of reveal where it is. But then there, you know, I will say this, a lot of episode two was around Jared Gordon and the story of Jared Gordon heading into this fight, which, I mean, obviously it's a story that's been told with himself and his fiance and his situation with COVID. So that was, there's definitely been a lot of profile on Jared Gordon heading into this. But yeah, I'm really interested to kind of see it. I would say overall, I think for if you're, you know, an MMA fan and you got an ESPN Plus subscription, which I'd imagine if you're listening to this podcast, that you do have an ESPN Plus subscription, I highly recommend it. Each episode's, I want to say they're all like 43 to 45 minutes long. I didn't feel like I was watching, a 45-minute show. It went pretty quickly. So I sat there. I was actually having a little issues getting it to load on my computer, whether it was on my iMac or on my MacBook Pro. So I just popped over to my iPad and I watched it there. And but yeah, I would say overall, I really did enjoy it. And I know Daniel, you mentioned to me before the show that you're gonna sit there and watch that over this weekend, because I would tell you I'm gonna have some time this weekend to kind of just hang out since the Bucks play on Thursday. I don't have a game on Sunday, so it'd be the rare Sunday off for me. I'm actually looking forward to just kind of hanging out. I think me and my wife are going to take my nieces over to Universal Studios. They had a great deal for Florida residents. So, man, I'm looking forward to this weekend.
I don't understand, Jason. You're not excited about the Florida State football game this weekend? I mean, they performed amazing this past weekend. You're not hyped about that, you know, following
No.
Dude, I don't understand how the hell there was a time on Saturday where I saw y'all losing to Jackson. I don't know how the hell that was happening. But I think you, oh my God, you are playing Notre Dame too. Yeah, Jason, stay away from sports this weekend. You're going to get your sports action on Thursday. And I do think that's a weekend where you deserve not to be stressed out about your Seminoles. And then for me, I think I'll have plenty of time too. I think even though my Texans got a new head coach, I'm so depressed about them. And, you know, I need help. I need help. And I think the help is going to be sitting down watching all four episodes of this documentary. And I think for the viewers, the listeners, I think we will talk about episodes 3 and 4 in particular next week. So if you guys want to catch up and see what we're talking about, that's something that we will do.
Of course, the UFC was back on Fight Island last week, and clearly the story of that card, Daniel, was Holly Holm. But to me, my top star of that fight card, I don't know how many people are going to talk about this person's performance. Maybe no one's really talking about it, but to me, I want to highlight this guy, and that is referee Kevin Sataki, who was working the co-main event matchup between Jorgen Castro and Carlos Felipe, which I absolutely love the fact that, you know, Jorgen's holding the cage and he breaks him up, has Jorgen lose that position. And then later on, Carlos Felipe is grabbing the top of the cage. He takes that off, has him lose the position. So my underlining star of UFC Fight Island 4 to me is referee Kevin Sataki.
Oh, that's a nice call, man. That really is, because I've mentioned it before, but that type of offense in the sport grinds my gears, because it is unlike an eye poke and it is unlike a groin strike, because it's 100% intentional to grab the fence or the top of the cage. That is a choice you are making. That is not a mistake. And I think that it's important to treat it like that. And he absolutely did, changing the position. I mean, personally, in my perfect world, I would say, hey, man, let's deduct a point. But that seems a bit aggressive on the way we go about doing things nowadays. But at least changing the position is a great start. So that's a nice little underlying star. So often when we see officiating we don't like, we will highlight it, which we should. But quite often as well, when there's some underlying stuff that's good officiating, we don't mention it. And usually when it's good officiating, we don't even notice it, which I'm glad you gave him some love. But I mean, to me, yeah, the big star has to be Holly Holm. I mean, she was so dominant against Irene Aldana and so well-rounded with her stand-up, and then also securing the rounds in a big way with her wrestling. After the fight card, she was really, really highly searched on Google, which lets you know that she resonated with people. And this was on a fight card where you didn't expect a whole lot of people to be watching. So for Holly Holm, this was her night. This really felt like a performance that revalidated herself. And it seems pretty, pretty clear that Holly Holm continues to improve. And it seems pretty clear that she's going to find herself facing Amanda Nunes pretty dang soon once again.
Yeah, that was kind of the big question mark coming out of this event, was the fact that we had two women's bantamweight matchups on this card, with the other one being a winner by Jermaine de Romandame. As if you had that ticket of Jermaine by submission plus 2,300, kudos to you. I don't know how many people had that ticket, because or first submission win. But if you look at it and said you had to pick one fighter to be next for Amanda Nunes at 135 pounds, to me, it's Holly Holm. It was a great performance by her. I mean, she lands almost 100 more total strikes than Irene Aldana in the fight. And that's the one thing about Holly Holm, is that she's not known as a volume puncher. I mean, leading into this, the strikes per minute rate was Irene Aldana 6 strikes per minute, and Holly Holm was under 3. So, you know, that's why you really thought that if this was a volume type fight, that it would be Irene Aldana. But man, just an unbelievable performance there by Holly Holm. I mean, obviously the best performance for her, since the Ronda Rousey fight. I think there's no doubt about that. Amanda Nunes is slated to defend the 45-pound title in December against Megan Anderson. So, we'll see how time he makes up. But maybe from a timing aspect, what's going to make the most sense for the UFC is to go with a matchup between Holly Holm and Jermaine de Romandame at 135 pounds.
I think that would make sense, especially from a sporting perspective. I think if I'm the UFC, I would probably hold back on that fight, just because I look at Holm versus Nunes as the biggest possible Nunes fight I could make realistically right now, like in the next year. Holm versus Nunes is it. So because that's the case, if I was the UFC, I would hold off on the accelerator and just chill in neutral until we can make the Holm versus Nunes fight. Even though if De Rondame would take on Holm in a fight, I would favor Holly. From the UFC shoes, I wouldn't want to jeopardize the potential possibility of Holly versus Nunes again. Just because I really feel like that is head and shoulders a much more interesting fight than Nunes versus GDR, and even Nunes versus Megan Anderson. So that's why I would do that. But I just felt like for Holly, Her versus Jermaine would be a great fight because both of them performed so well. You saw a great improvement from both of them. And that's what gets you really excited about Holly Holm is that this was one of her better career performances, which is very hard to do after you've already had plenty of times at the mountaintop. Holly is aging as if she is in her mid-20s, not her late 30s. That kind of shows you that she is just one hell of an athlete. She has that athletic mindset of consistently improving and pounding the pavement every single day. And she is working herself into shape into being a champion, which is a very, 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 very hard thing to do, but a real possibility in terms of dethroning Amanda Nunes. Not a big one, but if there's anyone I could look at who maybe could beat Amanda Nunes right now in this sport, Holly has the best shot. Not that I'm picking her, but I do think she has the best shot just because when I look at her, I'm like, damn, she is still improving, which is so hard to do. Jermaine Duranamy looked good too, but this was a fight where Juliana Pena clearly won round two with her wrestling. And Pena would have, I mean, this fight, I mean, GDR won round one, better stand-up fighter, bar none. But Pena got her head stuck in the guillotine choke and she got choked out. So this was just a vital mistake for Pena. It wasn't necessarily GDR dominating Juliana the same way we saw Holly dominate Adanya.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I mean, it's you know, if for Pena, I mean, look, I think it's just, you know, obviously that's going to be a sequence that she's going to look at and just say, man, how did I put myself in that position? And you know, GDR showing that, I mean, look, she is much more than just a stand up fighter. In terms of the rest of this card, some of the notable performances that stuck out to me, I think you got to look at Phillips with his TKO win in the second round against Cameron Else. Pretty dominating win by Kyle Phillips. And now I'm actually talking to Kyle Phillips here on Friday. So be on the lookout for that on the MMAReport.com. Also, Dusko, great performance against Daquan Townsend. He got a second round victory there. You know, I'm evolving against Jordan Williams, man. Jordan Williams is one tough dude, man. He took some, you know, beating in that one. Casey Kinney had a great win against Alatang. Fight that, I mean, man, you talk about just the toughness that he had there. And Casey Kinney staying on Fight Island. He's getting another fight on Fight Island. So good. And I'll tell you what I love seeing was on, I want to say I saw a picture. It was either on Sunday or Monday, of Carlos Condit and Court McGee just having a cup of coffee together with their team as they get ready to head back to the United States. That was a cool photo to see.
It was a cool photo, and it was a great fight. It was so nice to see Carlos Condit perform well against Court McGee. I mean, round two was a hell of a round. It was really entertaining. Round one was a little cautious, but in round two, man, things were kicked into high gear. And it was so nice to see Carlos Condit get his first win in literally like 5 years. So for Carlos, I really enjoyed that main event, man. It was nice and nostalgic. And watching this fight, you thought he had a reason to get back in the cage again. No, now that he's beat Court, now you can get a little more jazzed up. I mean, Carlos doesn't look like a world beater, but I think he performed better than I expected against Court McGee, and he got that win. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next for Carlos, just because, again, he is a guy who makes you nostalgic. He is a guy, the natural born killer, who makes you excited about fights because he has that reputation of being violent and exciting. So I'm glad. I thought the Casey Kinney performance was great at bantamweight. I mean, he tenderized the midsection of his opponent, Alatang. I mean, that midsection was so damn red, man. I mean, if you served a steak that red, it would have to go back to the cook. That's how damn red it was. And it was just a dominant decision. Casey Kinney just looked like a hell of a one of the top fighters on this card. And it's exciting to see him compete again. That bantamweight division continues to improve with him and Kyler Phillips. And then I think the other fight I would mention would be Luigi Vendramini, who had just a dope head kick knockout over Yessen Ayari in the lightweight division. I thought Vendramini went out there first fight of the card, and you know it's a good night if you're the first fight and you end up walking away with the performance of the night bonus.
Yeah, great performance by him, and I saw that he mentioned kind of he did not get the win there. Didn't really know what his future was going to be. I do want to mention about the, of course, Bellator had two events over in Milan, Italy, and of course we talked about being a show where the Daly-Anderson fight ultimately did not happen. Paul Daly missing weight, the fight ultimately scratch, and Paul Daly mentioned about he wants to get back in there, but obviously Paul mentioning that this is the end of his career is approaching. But do want to mention about on Saturday, James Gallagher goes out there and gets the win. And, you know, James, a pretty one-sided fight. You know, he took Eleanor right to the mat and, you know, worked his jiu-jitsu, ends up getting submission win. A great win for James Gallagher. And then, you know, right after the fight's over, doesn't call out anybody in particular, just calls out the whole bantamweight division. And it's going to be interesting because I think that the time has now come. There's now been some time between that loss to Ricky Bandejas and kind of how Bellator has match-made James Gallagher over the past, you know, year or two, that it is time for James Gallagher to get into the elite of the division. You know, who knows? Maybe it's a guy like Brett Johns. Maybe it's a rematch against Ricky Bandejas, but the time has come for James Gallagher to fight one of the top five bantamweights in the Bellator 135-pound division.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, James just schooled Cal Eleanor. I mean, it was simple, and it was textbook and rudimentary. And he just went out there, brought him down, tapped him out, went in, went out. Dude's improving. It's hard to gauge how much he's improving because of the quality of opponents, but it seems like he's starting to piece it together. And from this point forward, you would want to see Gallagher against guys who are mainstay Bellator bantamweights. You don't even have to be top five guys. They have to be just guys who are under Bellator contract. That's who I want to see him fight. I want to see him fight guys who have name values, whether it be some of the new signings they've got or some of the top-tier guys. But James Gallagher, he's interesting, great personality, always going to be in the headlines. It's time to see him fight veterans consistently, win or lose, keep it going. He's looking good. It's just hard to know. I think that Italy card, it is worth mentioning that you guys, if you have not seen it, should watch Charlie Leary versus Kiefer Crosby. It's just a one-round fight. It ended after the first round due to doctor stoppage. But Crosby and Leary, that was the most enjoyable round of the entire weekend of fights. It was back and forth. Both guys dropped each other, and it was so damn exciting. So I would highly recommend those to check out, Charlie Leary and Kiefer Crosby.
Yeah, no, that's a great recommendation there. Of course, Bellator does have two events this week in Paris. One will be headlined by Chet Congo taking on Tim Johnson. The other one will be headlined by Michael Page taking on Ross Houston. Ross Houston, a former Cage Warriors champion. I mean, typically when we talk about Cage Warriors champions, I mean, typically they come to the UFC. So that was kind of a notable signing for Bellator. Obviously not the fight that I want to see for Michael Page. I mean, if you tell me there's a fight for Michael Page, I want to see Michael Page versus someone like Lorenz Larkin. That's the fight that interests me as well. But I mean, look, Michael Page, at the end of the day, he is must-watch television because you never know what he may go out there and do. So, you know, really that is, when I look at the Bellator 248 card, that's the fight card that does stand out to me. Alan Omar is on that card as well. He was a recent signing of Bellator. And then, you know, there is definitely something cool about the fact of the first MMA events in Paris and Chet Congo's headlining.
Yeah, that is cool. That is really, really cool. And I mean, when you think of French MMA, Chet Congo is the first guy I can even think of that represented France. I mean, I'm sure there's been a guy before him. There's probably a guy before him in the first 10 UFCs, but when Czech was big in the UFC, I think France and MMA was a real topic of conversation for the longest time, getting regulated. And to see a guy who competed in the UFC when we were in the 60s, years later, get an opportunity to perform in his home country that did not regulate mixed martial arts, it's pretty delightful. It's a nice thought. The thought of watching him fight Timothy Johnson isn't a good one, but the thought of him performing in France is. So I'm not excited about Congo versus Timothy Johnson, but it'll be a good walkout. So I'm looking forward to that. Although there aren't any fans there, so there won't be fans, right?
No, I think they're going to have limited fans, I want to say.
They're going to, okay, well, you know what? I'm glad there's at least some fans. That kind of sucks that you if you had waited this entire time and then there's just no fans there. It's like you might as well just put it in Siberia if there's nobody there. You might as well put it in somebody's apartment. So I'm glad there's some fans there because at least there'll be some people in the audience to experience history. But it is nice that that is taking place, and you know, this fight card, it's definitely stronger than what we saw this past weekend out of Bellator's offerings. But it's still not fully formed. It's still not something that will be a part of the conversation unless something crazy happens with Michael Page, which is possible. He's known to do some crazy stuff. But, you know, we'll be watching. And if there's any people who have blowaway performances, we'll surely mention it.
Yeah, that was one of the things I kind of noticed last week just on social media. There was a lot of people that I would label kind of in the hardcore bubble that were like Bellator as an event today. I mean, and I think that's something where if you're a representative of Bellator, you got to kind of take that note of like, okay, maybe we got to do a little bit more to let people know about our fights. And obviously the fights are now on CBS Sports Network, but Dan, I mentioned about, you know, last weekend, I did not stay up to watch Holm Aldana just because I had to be up early the next morning to get to the stadium for work. But since I don't have work on Sunday, I can stay up on Saturday night. And I am looking forward to watching Mon Race versus Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah, dude. Oh, that's a great car. That's a great main event. The card is so okay, but that main event is a barn burner banger. Corey Sandhagen, Marlon Moraes. I mean, that top tier of the bantamweight division is at a point where you could literally blindfold yourself and pair the names against each other, and you're going to have a dope fight. That's where that 135-pound weight class is right now. And Sandhagen Moraes, sign me up, would watch. I feel bad for Corey Sandhagen. He's coming after that loss to Aljo, and he's got a take on Marlon Moraes. I mean, geez Louise. Marlon in a different world theoretically could be challenging for the bantamweight title right now. Granted, that wasn't a very convincing decision he had over Aldo. But you know Marlon's probably pissed coming off that fight. You know he's going to want to light the world on fire. And man, that's one hell of a fight. It's going to be well worth staying up. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to get through Ben Rothwell and Marcin Tybura. I mean, if that's melatonin right there, but if you get past that, I mean, you're going to get Barboza, Amir Khani, and Sandhagen Moraes. I mean, those top two fights, I'm excited.
Oh, look, those top two fights are absolutely reasons one, two, why you sit up and watch these things live on Saturday night. I was just kind of pulling it up here. By the way, your prelims, why would we do? Damn, we don't got to stay up late on Saturday night, FYI. Prelims start at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Main card, 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Wow, that's nice. I mean, that's how many fights do we have on this card? We have about 13 fights, I want to say, so that'll probably be 11 come fight day. But, you know, I'm excited. I hope we get a lot of finishes. I mean, there's a lot of names that excite me, right? Like, I'm excited to see Giga Chikadze fight, Impa Kasane fight, Chris Dawkins, Tom Breeze, KB Bular would watch, and this dude in middleweight who's debuting, I don't know how to say his name, but he's from KSW and EFC Africa, Dricus Duplessis. Let's go. I'm going to learn how to say his name after Saturday. I want to watch his fight. He takes on Marcus Perez, but anytime UFC brings in a guy that they sign and they put him in a spot where he is debuting on the main card, would watch. So I'm excited to see this guy who, again, his resume speaks for itself. To compete well and have success in both KSW and EFC Africa, that lets you know that this guy's from Africa and he's probably pretty dang good. And so I'm looking forward to seeing Dricus Duplessis. And I'm also looking forward to seeing how to pronounce his damn name.
I mean, I think when I look at this Fight Island card, I think up and down, there's fighters throughout the card that intrigue me, you know, that I want to see fight. You know, Impa is a guy that definitely is someone that very much interests me as he takes on Buckley. You know, you mentioned about Chikadze. I mean, yeah, the fight stays on the feet. Yeah, of course you won't watch Gigi Kaze fight. You know, you look at Yusuf Salal, who has been, you know, a guy that made his UFC debut back in February. He's been one of the most active fighters in all of the UFC. You know, you mentioned about the main event, co-main event. I mean, obviously there are reasons one and reasons two while you're watching this fight, as I think about the main event between Marlon Moraes and Corey Sandhagen, you know, it's like, okay, how does Corey bounce back from that loss against Aljo? And, you know, of course, we haven't seen a Marlon since that split decision win against Jose Aldo in December of last year. And I'll tell you a funny story. I forget where we were. I want to say maybe we were in Detroit. And we were out watching the fights. I remember we were waiting for a table, and this guy walks by. It was pretty cold outside. I said to my buddy Chris, I said, hey man, I never want to live in a city where you got to wear two jackets to go out.
yeah. I think that's. I can't even. These people who live in those cities, I don't understand. Me and you are like the same person. Because we both live in similar climates, except for it rains all the time. So, yeah, man, I would definitely say hell to the no to that. Like, I just, if it gets below 60 degrees, Jason, we're in some sketchy territory for me.
I just don't go outside.
Yeah, I don't understand how people get in shape. Like, how do you exercise outside if it's. Like, I don't understand how everyone in the northern part of our country isn't like super obese. Like I would be so fat. Like I would be 450 pounds. I would be Butterbean, but out of shape. I feel like Butterbean's in shape. He's an athlete, but I would never exercise. I would never run. Not that I do it that often nowadays, but I sure as hell wouldn't go out and play basketball or football or do whatever. Like, how the hell do these schools produce? I mean, that's how you know that they got good football players, because they're out there practicing, you know, doing some offensive line blocking. But damn, people who live in those climates are tougher than me.
Oh, no. Yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. You know, it's just I'll take my Florida weather every day of the week. But let me ask you about this, about Moraes and Sandhagen. I think most people would agree that if this fight ends within the first 15 minutes, it's Marlon Moraes. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You look at the way he's knocked fools out. I think that would be the outcome if this fight is finished.
I guess the question is how does Corey Sandhagen win by stoppage within 15 minutes? I guess that to me is kind of the question.
I don't know, because the way I look at this fight, I think for Corey, it's mostly going to be about outpointing Moraes. I mean, it's mostly going to be about trying to get volume and whatnot. And it's certainly possible. I mean, let's not act like this guy hasn't finished his fair share of folks. But for Marlon, against top-level guys, he's put them away quickly with his hands. Great power. And for Sandhagen, when I'm looking at how I could see him winning this fight, it's going to be by outstriking Marlon. And I think one of the things he's going to have to give up is maybe sitting down on his strikes and throwing the power, because if he does that, there's a real possibility of getting countered. And I think when I look at the way he could possibly finish it, it is through top position ground strikes is where I could see him finishing the fight, as well as possibly catching Marlon Moraes in submission. But those aren't likely outcomes. I think for Corey, I think you're looking at him outpointing Moraes here. But for him, you got to think about where you're at mentally, because you had all the hype in the world going up against Sterling, and that was an embarrassing loss to go all the way to UFC 250 and end your night in 90 seconds. Yeah. That's hard. That's hard to bounce back. And it's been Corey hasn't experienced losses in his martial arts career all too often. He's damn good. Last time he lost was in LFA. That's a high-profile loss against Aljo. And whenever you see guys lose for the first time, you always got to keep your, take that as a real. That's a real obstacle for people, especially for the first time. So for Corey, I mean, I think Marlon's the pick here in this fight. But I certainly wouldn't be surprised if Sandhagen wins, because this is razor thin. I just think Marlon's been there, done that. And Marlon's also coming off, again, a performance where I think it was a fine fight against Aldo, but I think he's going to want to put a stamp on his name. And I think we are going to see Marlon catch Corey here.
You know, you would think that because of the height difference that there would be a bigger reach advantage for Corey Sandhagen than he actually does. Corey Sandhagen, while he's 5'11" versus a 5'6" Marlon Moraes, he only has a 3-inch reach advantage.
Wow. I guess that's speaking more to Marlon's reach, right? Or unless, you know, Corey's. Yeah. The speed, I think, is going to be close, too. I mean, Corey's a fast striker with his hands. And usually when you look at those guys who are taller, you tend to think not so much. But he certainly has great hand speed. And, you know, Marlon, dude, that dude's got unbelievable hand speed. So I think from a speed perspective, it's going to be a fast-paced fight. I think you're going to give the edge to Marlon in that aspect. But it's going to be these are two guys who are very physically impressive. And again, just elite athletes. I think the stand-up's going to be very exciting. It really is. I think Marlon is going to counter Sandhagen, though. And that's how I see it ending, where it isn't an elongated strike from Sandhagen. He leaves himself open, and then you have a counter from Moraes. I hope this fight plays out on the feet. I think it has potential to be fight of the night. The other possibility is both these guys are going to respect each other 2 months, and we could get a little cautious approach early on. But I really hope that's not the case, and I don't think it will be.
Yeah, it's an interesting fight, but I do favor Marlon in the fight. I think it's, I mean, look, it's pretty much, I would say, a 50-50 type fight. You know, I wonder if the team elevation team behind Corey Sandhagen's thought process is going to be, hey, let's get this fight to the ground. Let's work and try to work it that way. Let's not make it a boxing matchup, which, you know, that's the type of fight that Marlon Moraes is going to want. You mentioned about that co-main event, Barboza and Americani. I mean, that's a great fight as well. You know, a huge opportunity for Makwan Americani to show he's among the elite at 45.
Yeah, man, and poor Barboza has been getting loss after loss after loss, and you feel for him. And Amir Khan's a tough fight, and I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen here. I really want to see Edson win. I'm biased here. He's delighted us with so many great performances, going all the way back to his kick knockout of Terry Edom. But Amir Khan, who's also a longtime veteran in this promotion, I think there's a real possibility he goes out here and beats Barboza, which is so sad. But Amir Khan has been performing really, really, really well lately. And I think for him, he's just got it all figured out right now. Whereas with Edson, unfortunately, even though he's fought some tough SOBs, I mean, he's only won once in his last six. But again, you look at the list of guys he's fought. UFC has not done him any favors. It's Nurmagomedov, Kevin Lee, Felder, Gaethje, and Aidy. I feel for Barboza. There's certainly a possibility that he beats Amir Khan, but there's the real possibility that he's beaten up from all of the wars he's been into. I mean, the way Edson kicks, that lets you know he's been kicking hard as hell for years on end. That type of training wears you out. So, I don't know. Barboza has unbelievable stand-up. Lethal leg kicks. If he goes out there and finishes Amir Khan with a shot to the body or a shot to the legs, would not be surprised. But because it feels like Amir Khan's arrow is on the rise and Edson's is on the downward trend, I'm picking Amir Khan here. But for Edson, Amir Khan literally presents the easiest matchup he's had since he fought Benil Dariush. That's a 4-year span. So there's also the possibility that he could just perform really well against lower level competition. But I still think Amir Khan wins.
Yeah, I was just looking. Makwan Amir Khan, he's a +220 underdog.
Wow. So yeah, there's my dog pick of the. Because the thing is, Amir Khan is a drastic. I mean, look at these names: Nurmagomedov, Kevin Lee in 2018, Dan Hooker, Gaethje, Felder, Danny Gay. I mean, think of those names, contrast it with what we think of Amir Khan now. Amir Khan, I think, is a step below those guys. But a year from now, it wouldn't be crazy to think maybe he's on that same level. So it's been a very long time since we've seen Barboza face a guy at Amir Khan's level. And Edson, again, we know what he does effing well. And some of those last losses were pretty dang close fights, too. So it makes sense that Edson's the favorite, but I'm going to pick Amir Khan in this one.
Yeah, it should be a good night of fights. I'm looking forward to watching those fights come up on Saturday night. We do want to wrap up this week's edition of the show by talking about a couple of news items. Usman versus Burns scratch from December 12th. It sounds like Usman's not going to be ready to go until the beginning of 2021. It's unfortunate, and I know Gilbert Burns kind of didn't like the something that Errol Helwani had said, that maybe Burns should, instead of waiting for Usman, that he should fight Leon Edwards. I mean, we're at this point of like, when's Leon Edwards ever going to fight? Like, I understand if you're Edwards at a matchup against Chimaev doesn't make sense. It doesn't. But he just went, you know, I think if you're Gilbert Burns and you're knowing that the fight's just going to be delayed till January, February, there's no reason to take another fight.
Yeah, there's no reason to delay the inevitable, which is a championship fight. I mean, it just seems like this fight's getting delayed because Kamaru Usman thought he would be in a different place than he is now with this recovery. And he just wasn't. And I think if you wait a month or two, I think you'll get the fight. So I think we'll see Burns wait it out. And, you know, that's always going to be a big question mark for Kamaru. When you listen to, I just think back to listening to his interview with Joe Rogan. And again, it really stuck with me how banged up the body of the champion is. I mean, he talked about walking backwards on stairs and doing all crazy stuff. His body is messed up from years of athletic competition. It's truly remarkable that he's been able to compete at a high level. And I think following his last fight, he thought, okay, I'll be okay on this date. And he wasn't, which does raise a red flag for whenever he does eventually compete. But for Burns, he's got to sit and wait. And for Leon Edwards, I mean, it's been over a year since we've seen him fight. Over a freaking year.
Yeah.
It's sad. It really is.
Yeah, I know. You just hope that he's able to get a fight there. The other thing I do want to mention is the signings that Bellator has made over the last, you know, two-ish weeks. And really, I think it's a sign of kind of seeing how their free agent strategy has signed. And, has changed, I should say, excuse me. Looking at the notable signings to me, Usman Nurmagomedov, 11-0. When that announcement was signed, I was pretty surprised. I just felt that he would be, you know, he was UFC bound, and that's not the case. He is Bellator bound. I think that's a great signing by Bellator. Brett Johns, that's a great signing by Bellator. He was a free agent and ultimately elected to go to Bellator instead of re-signing with the UFC. Some other ones that stick out to me, Jaleel Willis has been a guy on the regional scene working his way up. Also mentioned Justin Gonzalez, the LFA champion, the featherweight champion. He signs with them. Vanessa Porto also signing. That's a nice signing by Bellator. I mentioned about Alan Omar is fighting this weekend. Bryce Logan, Jared Scoggins, Jeremy Kennedy. To me, I think it really shows kind of how Bellator is looking at prospects and trying to get these fighters in. And I like the route Bellator is going here.
Yeah, I do too, man. I mean, look at these fight cards. They've been weak and they need that depth. They need those quality fighters, and they signed a whole bunch of them. It was a nice mixture of prospects and guys who have UFC experience who are well-respected and talented. I mean, Usman Kapilov is a great signing. Justin Scoggins is a good signing to add to your roster. And then I do think the prospects is the thing that really makes it great, because they're not all going to hit, but a couple of them will. And that's how you get your next Michael Chandler and your next Patricio Pitbull. And that's really exciting. It's interesting that they went to the same well that the UFC usually goes to. I mean, it's interesting that they got guys from LFA, which that just seems like a pipeline to the UFC, to the, you know, and maybe that speaks to maybe the pay for the contender series may have to bounce up. But I mean, Bellator is going to sign some guys as they open up that checkbook. And I do think the crown jewel has to be Usman Nurmagomedov. You Google his name and every other article is about, well, he's better than Khabib. He's going to be better than Khabib. Well, if Usman Nurmagomedov is better than the greatest fighter of all time, then I think we got ourselves a good signing by Bellator. It's how I would say that. I mean, shoot, Khabib is going for GOAT status here, and we're saying his cousin is better than him. Damn. I think that's one hell of a signing, and that's got to be the one signing where if you're the UFC, you're like, how the hell do we not get this guy under contract? What's going on here? Because there is no reason the UFC should not have signed this dude. because he looks like he's got a world of potential. And he just looks like a killer. He does. And I'm excited to see him fight the most.
Yeah, it's a signing that I was listening to a little bit of Daniel Cormier was talking about it on his show with Arawani on ESPN on Monday. And, you know, he was talking about it. He's like, you know, he's not been in our gym. He goes, but he goes, look, Javier's been over there, you know, with Habib preparing, and Javier, you know, praises him. So I think that's a great sign by Bellator. And I know Scott Coker mentioned potentially him making his Bellator debut December, January is something to pay attention to. So, yeah, it's a great signing by Bellator. I really like what they're doing here. And I think that's the thing. I think that, you know, the one negative thing I see with Bellator in terms of fans right now is just, hey, you were off for all these time. Where's the loaded fight cards?
Yeah, Bellator has not been putting on great fight nights. And it's been a while now that they've played on fight cards, and they have not done it. This was a great sign that they will do it going forward. And this was the first time in a great while where I've seen some Bellator news and thought, okay, they're starting to do better. And I think this was just a great, positive week of news for Bellator. I think as long these international cards aren't great. But I think for Bellator, you start projecting forward, I think you can get excited about, and when they come back to America, that Cyborg fight card looks interesting because you have Patricky Pitbull and Jaleel Willis. You have Bandejas Higo. I think you go to the next fight card, Musasi Lima, well, now we're talking. The question is, what do they fill in underneath it?
Yeah, I'm actually doing a couple of Bellator interviews over the next 24 hours or so, talking to Kyle Crutchmere, who's going to be taking on Cameron Lochinov, who I also spoke to a couple of days ago, talking to Joe Schilling, also talking to Syed Awad. Those interviews will all be a part of the Sunday podcast that I've been, well, I try to get it out on Sunday. Sometimes maybe get out till Monday, but this week it'll definitely get out on Sunday. So you'll be able to hear those interviews that I have with those fighters who are fighting at Bellator 249 coming up here next week in Mohegan. Man, I can't believe next week's already the middle of the month, Daniel.
I don't even, dude, it was like October 1st was yesterday, I'm pretty sure. And
or a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was yesterday. Dude, time doesn't make sense anymore. Can I just tell you that? It doesn't. Okay, because I swear to God, October 1st was yesterday, but I also swear to God, the last presidential debate was 2 months ago. So I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, so much has happened in our world since all that. But yeah, so
be what do you think's gonna that. What do you think's gonna happen? What do you think's gonna, like non like just random things? Like do you think the country of China is just gonna be like, all right, we're going to start our own professional football league, and we're going to take on the NFL, and we're going to start, like, what's going to happen? What bold prediction will happen? Will people stop eating pizza? I don't know.
I don't know, bro. I don't know. I mean,
who does Conor McGregor fight? What fight is announced for Conor McGregor before we record our next podcast?
Well, the money would say Dustin Poirier.
I'm going to go Conor versus Diego Sanchez. Let's go. I'm going to go I think Vanderlei Silva is going to announce he's taking on Conor on his fictional promotion.
Yeah, man. It is. Yeah, the last thing I do not want to see is Diego Sanchez fighting Conor McGregor, because that that would not be competitive, Daniel.
No. I say screw it. Put Diego in there against Carlos Condit. Just do it. But, I think. And again, listeners, check out the Fight Island documentary. We will talk about that. 3 and 4. That is my homework. Those whole 4 episodes.
Yeah, of course. Be sure to check out everything over at themmareport.com, the YouTube channel, or whatever podcasting platform you do listen to. 5-star reviews are always much appreciated. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which this edition of the podcast comes out every Wednesday. RadioFluence.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn Radio.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this week is the Impact World Champion. He's been through a crazy ride in this year we call 2020, and we're going to talk about it. He is Eric Young.
Sanity goes from not being on the talent available list to being on the talent available list. And I think sometimes they have an idea, and they definitely had a plan. We were supposed to be with New Day, and during the show, our debut, the main event was like an eight-man or a six-man, and I can't even remember who's in it, but I know it's three guys versus New Day, and then New Day goes over, and then our music hits, and we come out and stand on the top of the ramp to end SmackDown, and that's going to be the first time you see us. SmackDown goes off the air with the three of us standing there. It's a big moment. I mean, it's a cool spot to be in, working with New Day, these three guys that are absolute pros, three of the most amazing human beings that I know, three of the most talented wrestlers, professionals that I know, and the match went long, and our segment got cut, and that's what happens with live wrestling. So we're in California, and they're like, well, someone has to wrestle Jeff Hardy for the U.S. title. I'm pretty sure it was BG James, and Eric Young is excellent. He's a heel. He's new. It's a good spot for him, so have him come out and challenge Jeff. So that's what we do. But they're like, well, Eric can't beat Jeff. We don't even know who Eric is yet. You know, we know that Sanity's brand new. And then it's like, well, then maybe the Usos can come out and we attack Jeff Hardy, and the Usos come out and it rolls into a six man. Well, then it's like, well, they can't go over because the Usos are going for the tag titles and Jeff Hardy's the U.S. title. So the first time seeing this work on TV, we get beat. And like literally at that point, I knew we were done, like dead in the water. And not a person that's been concerned about winning and losing, but there's times when you got to win. And when you're a debuting group, half the audience doesn't even know who we are, and we get beat the first time seeing us wrestle on TV, we're dead. We're dead in the water. Dead before we, you know, before we can even learn to walk, they're breaking our legs.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.